Now, the law of the jungle lays down that if there is any dispute as to the right of a cub to be accepted by the pack, he must be spoken for by at least two members of the pack who are not his father and mother. "Who speaks for the cub?" said Akela. "Among the free people, who speaks?" There was no answer, and Mother Wolf got ready for what she knew would be her last fight if things came to fighting. Then, the only other creature who is allowed at the pack council, Baloo, the sleepy brown bear, who teaches the wolf cubs the law of the jungle, old Baloo, who can come and go where he pleases because he eats only nuts and roots and honey, rose up upon his hind quarters and grunted. "The Mars cub?" "The Mars cub?" he said. "I speak for the Mars cub. There is no harm in a Mars cub. I have no gift of words, but I speak the truth. Let him run with the pack and be ended with the others. I myself will teach him." There is a place in the remote northwoods of Minnesota, North America. It's located near the town of Orr, population approximately 300. Outside of this town is an area where normal rules are put to one side. It's a place where humans and wildlife meet. It's a special place, wholly unique and not without its controversies. This is the Vince Schuette Wildlife Sanctuary, run by the American Bear Association, ABA for short. The ABA is dedicated to promoting a better understanding of black bears and all wildlife through education, observation, and experience. I'm your host, Philip Stubley, and welcome to The Bear Den. Hello, it's me, Philip, and this is The Bear Den, where we talk about bears, wildlife, and those making a difference for them. So that reading was Baloo's first appearance in Rudyard Kipling's The Jungle Book, set in India. But a sleepy brown bear doesn't exactly sound much like a sloth bear. Yes, today we are talking about sloth bears, the bear with its shaggy mane of hair, long snout, and white chest marking. And also, apparently, the bear species, on average, with the longest tail. So we are going to discuss this most unusual bear, and I am joined by sloth bear expert Thomas Sharp, Conservation and Research Director for Wildlife SOS and co-chair of the IUCN Sloth Bear Expert Team. I was fortunate enough to visit the Wildlife SOS facility at Agra on a trip to India at the end of 2025 and see the great work they've been doing, rescuing not just bears, but elephants and many other animals as well. Said to be one of the least studied bears, Thomas provides insights on distinct sloth bear behaviour, habitat, and threats, and we talk about the differences and parallels with other bear species. We also talk about ongoing research projects, including home range studies, denning behaviour, and human-bear interactions in India, and Wildlife SOS's work to mitigate human-bear conflict. Thomas also shares experiences from fieldwork and conservation efforts with elephants as well. And of course, we get to the bottom of just what sort of bear Baloo is. It's a cornucopia of information, which I'm really thrilled to share with you. So I'll stop gabbing and we'll welcome Thomas into the Bear Den. I'm very grateful to have you here today and to talk to you about a bear that the more I read about them, the more I just get intrigued and fascinated. But I think sloth bears, they're quite sort of unique and different to most other bear species, as I suppose they all are really, but there's something about, I don't know what it is, there's something about sloth bears. Could you just introduce yourself and tell us where you're speaking to us from?
Yeah, so my name's Thomas Sharp, and I work with Wildlife SOS. So I go over to India a few times a year, and generally otherwise I'm in Utah, actually, in the United States.
So what is your background? Like, how did you get involved with Wildlife SOS? Is it something like wildlife has always been a passion, working with bears?
Yeah,
or?
Been doing wildlife work for, went to school for wildlife, got my master's degree in wildlife, and had worked for various organizations doing different things, including U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I ran a field station out in the islands. And then I worked for a private company doing wildlife research, doing surveys throughout the Western United States, mostly a little back east, but and I've, had previously done some work overseas, but not a ton. And I met Kartik and Gita, who are the co-founders of Wildlife SOS. And they were running a program to save dancing bears in India. which were sloth bears and basically cubs that had been poached from the wild. And what they would do, very inhumane practice of basically they put a rope through the nose of these bears and kind of dance them for people for money. I guess it began because they would entertain moguls, that type of thing. But as time went on, it became entertaining tourists and hoping to get tips on the street, that type of thing. Anyway, Kartik Sethyanarayan and Gita Seshamani, the co-founders of Wildlife SOS, saw this and wanted to put an end to it. I met them when they were already working on that. Things were going very well. But since I had a wildlife degree, at some point Kartik had asked me, "Oh, would you like to work with some of our researchers and do some research on wild sloth bears?" Which, of course, I was interested in, and I did as a volunteer for years. Now I work for Wildlife SOS full time for about the last 10 years, so that it's been my full time job. But it kind of started very slowly. I'd go out there on my own time, work with the team, and we've expanded since then. And we actually work on four different species of bear in India now. So not only the sloth bear, but the Himalayan brown bear, Asiatic black bear, and even a little work on the sun bear, which do barely make it into India in the northeast corner of India. So that's kind of the background of how I got started working with Wildlife SOS and Kartik and Gita, and then the rest of the researchers over there.
You've already said so much that I could go off topic, but I'll try and stick to bears.
Feel free, feel free, whatever you want to do.
I was going to ask. I heard about the overlapping sort of territories with sun bears and sloth bears, and I just wondered if do you know of much competition between the species? Do they kind of avoid each other? Do they do their own thing?
Great question, because bears as a group, right? So there's eight living species of bear, and they have specialized to some degree. However, bears are basically bears. Most of these bears are omnivores. Even pandas will eat some insects. Polar bears will eat some grass or do other things potentially. But polar bears and pandas are a bit of the outliers. Most of them are pretty much omnivores. And the kind of point I'm getting at is that there is competition between different bear species. Of course, the most competition in the wild is between individuals that are the same species. But the cl second closest would be individuals from other species that are very closely related. And so if you look at the biogeography of bears, there will be a lot of competition between different bear species. Now, sloth bears, and I've done a lot of work on the biogeography of bears in India, in largely northeast India, but also Kashmir area. And I've done some of that work with Dave Gershelis, who you know. Dave was actually our team leader on that one. But we were looking at it for a location in northeast India where you might have the overlap of three species, which is very rare, which would be sloth bears, Asiatic black bears, which are found in the mountainous regions of India, and then sun bears, which barely make it into India. And we've located one area where they might overlap seasonally, but the truth is, with sloth bears, there isn't a lot of overlap with other bears. If you look at Kaziranga National Park, for example, in northeast India, within the park, which is largely a floodplain, it's an incredible park in India, and it's got rhinos and elephants and big rivers. But if you're in the park where it's very open, I mean, there's forested areas and then there's open grasslands, you basically have sloth bears in those areas. If you go to the Carby Hills, I think it's east of there, then you have Asiatic black bears. Or if you look at other parks in India, like Corbett National Park or Rajaji, both those areas have both sloth bears and Asiatic black bears. But you really don't, it seems like now, I'm open if, anybody comes out with any research showing otherwise, but it seems very much that in the high elevation areas, you have the Asiatic black bears, and then the lower grassland or lower areas, you have sloth bears, so that they don't overlap to such a huge degree, actually. Now, why they don't is probably very complex. Like biogeography is, of course, very complex. But I think part of it is that just using Asiatic black bears. Asiatic black bears are more forest bear. Sloth bears can inhabit, they can be forest bears or open forest or even grasslands. So in place like Kajuranga, you have sloth bears. I mean, I've been there several times. We were doing sloth bear surveys there. A lot of sloth bears in the park. But you get outside the park where it's more heavily forested, and that's where you have the Asiatic black bears. So several things are going on. The sloth bear has probably evolved to take advantage of that type of habitat. Sloth bears have also evolved an aggressive, defensively aggressive behavior towards tigers. So in the park, you have tigers. Sloth bears can deal with tigers to a large degree by becoming very aggressive. Tigers do occasionally eat sloth bears. It's just a fact, but they have a defense against it, whereas tigers might be helping to actually keep Asiatic black bears out, because Asiatic black bear defense for tigers is usually simply to climb a tree. If you're in a very open area and there's nowhere to climb a tree, they don't have a lot of defense for that. So you have a different habitat, you have a predator which might be involved in this. There's just a lot that goes into it. And in terms of sun bears and Asiatic black bears, those two species overlap throughout a lot of Southeast Asia. And there is a lot of overlap in their habits, in their diets, and that type of thing. Rob Steinmetz, who's also a grad student of, well, he's not a grad student anymore, but back in the day of Dave Garcelles, he's done a lot of work on looking at, how these two species overlap. And I'm not an expert in it. I do know that it does seem like in certain areas you'll have many more Asiatic black bears than sun bears. Other areas it seems like there's more sun bears than Asiatic black bears. Why that is, I don't know. Rob would know better than I would, but yeah, there is a lot of competition between bears. And if you take this even further to say the United States and Canada, if you go to little offshore islands off the north, off the west coast, you usually only have one of the two species, right? So on the mainland, you have American black bears overlapping with grizzlies throughout big parts of their range. But if you go on smaller islands, you tend to get only one species or the other. And of course, the reason would be that there's enough competition between those two species, and there's a small enough space that only one of the two is really going to make it. So on some islands, you only have brown bears. On other islands, you only have American black bears. And that's basically due to the competition between these two closely related species. I don't know if I just went a little too long there, but that's.
Oh, no, it's fascinating. I mean, I was actually in my head making the connection when you were talking about how sloth bears are, open plains, so they go attack while Asiatic black bears will climb a tree. That sounds very much like sort of grizzlies and black bears.
Very much.
And yeah, and it's weird. I know that obviously Asiatic black bears and sun bears overlap a lot, especially in places like Vietnam. But then, so they have a very similar sort of diets and habitat, but then you've also got Asiatic black bears that, are in Russia, right? And
Yeah,
well,
that's
not
right.
so they can adapt to the cold as well, but where I can't see sun
That's
bears
right.
doing that as much, but I could be wrong.
No, you're right. That's exactly right. And in fact, Asiatic black bears in some of their range, they actually hibernate. In other parts, they don't hibernate because, yeah, I mean, they're found everywhere from warm climates to very cold climates. So, yeah, and you're right about sun bears as well. They're the most tropical of all the species, very much further south.
Indeed, yeah. Just going back to sloth bears, they got their name initially when they were first classified by science because it was believed they were related to sloths of South America, which, as we know, they're very unlike sloths. They're very agile and, I'd say like quite aggressive or defensive. And yeah, they're pretty much found across India. It's like it's Nepal, Bhutan, and there is a subspecies in Sri Lanka as well.
That's right.
And as I said, I think they're quite different to other bear species, and I kind of wanted to ask what their distinct characteristics are.
Yeah, it's a great question. I once put together a talk for a group on kind of looking at very generally on sloth bear evolution or how this species would come to be. And certainly the big thing that happened with sloth bears is They became myrmecophagous. They basically became a specialist in eating termites and ants. If you look at India over the past last 6 million years, roughly, there's evidence to suggest that the country has been drying out slowly. So soft bears split off about 4 to 5 million years ago. It seems like every paper I see on this has it a little different. So we'll ballpark it. Say somewhere between 4 and 5 million years ago, sloth bears split off. They probably evolved from something like the Etruscan bear. And as there became less fruit available on the landscape, they needed other food sources to kind of fill in. And so over time, they became a specialist in eating termites and ants. Now, what this meant was that they were going to evolve to be diggers rather than climbers. So they could dig into termite mounds, go after insects, and a lot of other changes happened with them, physical changes, not just longer claws, but they had a raised palate so they could suck in insects. They're able to close their nostrils independently, probably to keep soldier termites out of their nasal passages. So they can do all these things that specialized in taking advantage of a very plentiful food source across their range. So that's great, and that solved one problem. But of course, like life, every time you solve a problem, another problem arises because you did that. Now, probably their biggest problem as they evolve slowly to become myrmecophagous or termite eaters, basically termite and ant eaters, was that they're no longer great climbers. And the reason, now they can climb, don't get me wrong. You'll see sloth bears in trees and they can climb trees to get at food, but they're no longer an efficient climber. And what I mean by that is if you look at bears like Asiatic black bears, sun bears, American black bears, Andean bears, they're incredible climbers. They can just shoot up a tree, no problem. And where that comes in handy is with predators. How do you deal with large predators on the landscape? So while these other bears are climbers, then you have other bears that really aren't climbers, like adult brown bears, say in the US. But that's a large bear, much larger. Sloth bears are the second smallest bear. So a brown bear would have a little easier time dealing with potential predators than a very small sloth bear. So sloth bears then evolve a very defensively aggressive behavior to deal with species like tigers. This is a paper I wrote up with Dave Karcelis and Wes Larson about this behavior that they show towards tigers. It's how they deal with that issue. So that works part of the time. And then the other thing that sloth bears do, other than becoming defensively aggressive, which works great for tigers, but is a problem for people, and we can talk about that later. But they also became day denners. They use resting dens in the middle of the day. And that's probably, I mean, it could be two things, and it's hard to parse these things out. But they probably use these resting dens, one, to stay out of the heat of the day so they can stay cooler. And secondly, to avoid predators again. So as they evolve through time, they're staying in dens for part of the day. They come out and feed at night. They have a behavior they use against predators. And so all these things make for a very unusual, kind of unique bear, which is the sloth bear.
Well, I'm glad you said myrmecophagous because I always struggle saying that.
To be honest with you, I have too in the past. Like, I think I was pronouncing it incorrectly for a while, but so I
Well,
try to say just termite eaters, termite and
yeah.
ants.
Oh, it's interesting you say about that. Well, obviously with the denning, because well, sloth bears, they don't hibernate. I mean, the females use dens for giving birth and raising cubs, but because a bit like sun bears, the warm weather means they don't have to hibernate, right?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah, and I believe it was a paper I came across that you recently co-authored was all about a particular behavior that sloth bears have. It's where mothers carry their cubs on their backs.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And that's interesting as well because that's probably also related to predators. Both large predators and maybe smaller predators like leopards, say, which are very stealthy and could pick cubs off. But they, you know, it's hard to take a cub off a mother's back, in essence,
Yeah, I wouldn't
right?
try.
No, neither. But yeah, so all these are kind of these anti-predator behaviors because, in fact, I was just looking into this recently where the question kind of came up because even brown bears, right? Their cubs climb trees to get away from predators or male brown bears. And so the question came up, why do sloth bear cubs actually climb onto their mother's back? Is it because they can't climb trees, or is it because for some reason they shouldn't be climbing trees to escape? So I talked to several people who had raised sloth bear cubs, including from Wildlife SOS, as well as some zoos in America, which had cubs. And the question was basically, you know, at what age, if they're coming out of their dens after being in there between 2 and 3 months, let's say, could they climb a tree at that age? And the feedback that I'm getting is that they actually could, which is very interesting because then the question quickly becomes, so why don't they do that? And the answer, which we've been talking about recently, because actually we're doing a follow-up to our soft bear tiger paper, and this one is on soft bear and leopard interactions. And it had been Laurie and Seidensticker had said long ago that they don't climb trees because of leopards. And I always thought, I don't think that's really true. Leopards aren't important predators. But now that we're looking at the cubs, they might be important predators for the cubs. So in other words, it might be a mistake for a sloth bear cub, like if it's an American black bear and she sends her cubs up, well, American black bear send her cubs up a tree and she can either run off or climb the tree herself. Grizzlies will send their cubs up the tree. If a sloth bear were to send her cubs up a tree and that predator was a leopard, we all know how well leopards climb. They're incredible climbers. So that cub is really much safer with the mother than they would be climbing up a tree. So that I think the carrying cubs on the back might be because of leopards as well. And when I say as well, it's because, you know, I read a paper by Seriodkin, who does tiger bear research in Eastern Russia. And there is a line in there about how it seems that tigers, they're smart enough to use a mother's cub against the mother. The tiger can actually make the mother put herself in jeopardy by threatening the cubs, which is an advantage to the tiger. But in India, if a sloth bear comes across a tiger, the tiger, at least for young cubs, it can't get between her and her cubs because the cubs are on her back. So it actually would have an advantage for large predators like tigers, or in the past, certain saber-toothed cats, which sloth bear evolved with, like Megatherium or Dinofelis. But it also has an advantage for those smaller, very stealthy predators like the leopard. So I find that kind of thing fascinating, quite frankly. So, you know, and I'm lucky enough to have a network of people who I can talk to because I was actually talking with Dave Garcelis, and we were asking that question about can these cubs climb? And so it was just nice to be able to go, well, let's reach out to our colleagues who have actually raised them
Well,
and get some answers. So, yeah.
yeah, it's funny. Like, again, that's just making me think of some bears. We would get a variety of cubs. Often cubs come in, and the story was mainly the same. Their mother had been killed, and they'd been taken to either be sold on the pet trade, or people just wanted them because they thought they were cute. And it was interesting because they all had varying abilities, and the one there was like one came in, and she couldn't have been more than a couple of months, 2, 3 months old, and she could climb. Like, that was one of the first things she started doing. And there was another cub who he'd come in, And he came in very young, couldn't climb at all. But because we took those two out together, he would watch her, and then he would just copy her and start climbing. And he pushed himself. Yeah, so that was really fun to watch, actually, because you could tell they were sort of teaching each other almost.
Really neat. Really neat.
Yeah, and so I was also going to say as well, because they are classified as vulnerable in the wild, sloth bears, and the population's in decline. So, like, what are the kind of main threats that sloth bears face?
Yeah, it's an interesting, well, interesting. I will say first off, like I think sloth bears are lucky to be in a place like India and Sri Lanka, where there is a generally a pretty good ethic about wildlife. But obviously, the big problem in India is just human population. And when these animals are losing habitat, that's the biggest problem. There's also some poaching issues for sure in the past for things like the dancing bear trade, which I talked about earlier. They would, go in and take the cubs. And if the mother came back, because when they den, there's a moment when after the mother has cubs, she stays with her cubs for about 2 months. And then for about 2 weeks, she starts leaving the den to go out quickly to get water or some food before coming back to the den. And that's a very vulnerable time for the cubs. And that's when poachers would actually try to go in and take the cubs. It's when the mother starts leaving the den without the cubs. And if the mother came back, of course, because they wanted the cubs and because sloth bear mothers would be very dangerous, they would kill the mother as well. So if you want to really hurt a wild population, you remove the cubs, the young, and then you remove the breeding females. So, poaching like that can have a huge impact on wild populations. And then I talked about this behavior they have of being aggressive towards tigers, which has served them well for tigers and other large predators for several million years. But now in today's world, it is an issue because they use basically that same behavior that they use towards tigers towards humans. Now, when they use it towards a tiger, if the tiger wants to, they can just kind of run off, which they do often. But, a sloth bear is not going to catch a tiger, but humans is a whole different thing. And they have those long claws, which are their big weapons. And so there are probably more attacks on humans by sloth bears than any other species of bear, possibly more than all combined, but it's hard to say that, but it is possible. Now, part of that is that the encounter levels are high. They live in a very populated country. They used to occur in Bangladesh, another very highly populated country, which now they're completely extirpated from that country. But they still obviously occur in India, and there's going to be encounters with humans. Now, most of those encounters are not going to end in an attack. And I'm as guilty of this as the next person because I publish papers on sloth bear attacks, and that's what we do as scientists. But to get the idea that these are bears that are just willy-nilly attacking people all over the place is not the case. They are trying to avoid people as much as they can. They will run away and they don't want to have to charge. That's a huge energy expenditure and everything else. But unfortunately, if you surprise a sloth bear, and they're not the most aware bear of all the species, they tend to have their heads down. They're foraging for termites or what have you. And so if you surprise one, because of their biology, they're more likely to attack. And those attacks can be really bad. Roughly, I don't have the numbers on me, but I think in our study, it was 7 to 8% ended in death of the human. And some others could be very bad maulings, which can affect people throughout the rest of their life. Now, most of them ended with not severe damage, but a significant portion did. So that's always a problem for conservation because it's hard to go into an area and push the conservation of a species if somebody's mother or brother, whatever it is, has been attacked recently. You don't have warm, cuddly feelings about that species. And, I think they're an incredibly great looking bear. I don't know why I'm in the minority with that, but they're not. My point here is they're not as charismatic as, say, a tiger. Anybody can look at a tiger and it's like, that is a beautiful animal, and I'm no different. Not everybody looks at a sloth bear and says, oh my God, that is a beautiful animal. I think they are. I think they're incredible looking, but they're not one that catches the headlines the way other, charismatic megafauna do, even like brown bears do, or tigers or lions or elephants, that type of thing. But one positive we have in terms of conservation is probably largely because they are termite eaters and anteaters, is they have relatively small home ranges for a bear species. And that can be very useful for conservation purposes. Though I will say, with the team in India that I work with, that I'm part of, Swaminathan and Dr. Arun and the team, Reagan and Yogaraj, collared bears in India. And in our area that we do a lot of our work, we're going to publish a paper soon. But in our area, we did get larger home ranges than were found in other areas for sloth bears. For the females, it was still larger, but not hugely different. But for the males, we found that some of these males are really covering quite a bit of ground, over 100 square kilometers. And that could be unique to our area, or it could be that we're using a different technology. I mean, we're using GPS collars, and this is actually the first bigger study done with GPS collars for sloth bears. And with most bear species, when they started using GPS instead of VHF, they got bigger home ranges because the technology is just better, so you're
Bit
able
more
to get
accurate,
more
yeah.
points. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. So, because if the sloth bear's home ranges are larger than you thought, I'm guessing there's a bit more overlap. And do they, I guess maybe it's something you're looking into, but do they share resources more, do you think, or?
So, good question. Like share resources with each other, or
Well,
what are you
yeah,
asking?
I'm just thinking, because I think pretty much so seen with black bears that if, say, one season, they're having a poor food showing in one area, then they'll go, oh well, it's not like they invite them around for dinner, but there's an understanding they can come over and eat there, or and vice
Yeah.
versa.
Isn't those Ben Killam's books, right? Have you read those?
I've read those, yeah.
And I do think there is a lot of tolerance. Now, one thing with bears, and as far as I know, and I don't think this has been shown for all bear species, but I know, like, for American black bears, and from my understanding, brown bears kind of work in the same way, where females always try to stay home, or they're going to try to den, make a little home range near where their mother is. And the males, of course, disperse further off. And this certainly seems to be the exact same case with sloth bears, that you do get the daughters of the mother in our studies seem to be staying quite close to where the mother bear is, as long as they can. And of course, at some point they can't. And we actually had a case where one female did a long distance dispersal. Her home range overlapped completely with her sister's, because we had documented them since they were cubs. And one of the sisters ended up moving because at some point there's too much overlap, maybe not enough resources. But what I will say is that sloth bears seem very tolerant of one another in that way. We have video of, we in our study areas, we set up camera traps to follow bears at dens, so we could get an idea of what they were doing, collect some behaviors. And we even have video of a mother bear with two cubs on her back. She has two cubs on her back and she's walking. She runs into another sloth bear, which that bear reacted incredibly strongly when it saw the mother bear, like very happy, very. I mean, I know people will say I'm anthropomorphizing, but you could tell the bear was excited, let's say, an excited state. And she went up to the mother, and mothers with cubs are very tentative about other bears. But the mother went right over and sniffed. I bet we have no data on this, so I am speculating to be clear, but I'm almost certain that had to be one of her previous cubs, or it could be a sister, I suppose. But they actually ended up walking all off in the same direction together, even after just meeting. And my point of all that is that it does seem to be that they're very tolerant of one another, and that the families do kind of set up shop near one another, and they're not generally too aggressive with one another. The males are a little different, but I still think they're quite tolerant of one another. But we certainly documented like interactions between a young male and a adult male over a den site that the young male was using, and they would get in their squabbles and fight a little. And then actually the younger male, which was there earlier, was able to several times kind of fight off the larger male, and because he was staying there. So I do think they are a tolerant bear. I think part of that is probably, again, me being a termite eater and having that type of food on the landscape might make it so they're not as, they're still in competition, there's no question, but not, they don't react as strongly, let's say.
Oh, interesting. I'm really intrigued as well. Do you happen to know how many species of termite or ants that the sloth bears actually eat?
I don't. I have talked to some termite specialists before, and I've never been able to get a clear answer. And to be honest, when we've done diet studies, and I'm only speaking for our group, we haven't gone through the specific species. So I don't, and we have been curious about that. Somebody will do it. I'm hoping
Yeah. All
somebody will
right.
look at
I'll make a note. All right. Next time I'm in
that.
India. No, I only ask because I'm sure it's somewhere. I read it somewhere, but it's like apparently this like 50 different types of species that some bears eat of termites and
Oh.
termites that. So I was
Yeah,
just like, I wondered if there was something for sloth
there's
bears.
a lot of species of termites.
Yeah.
So I have no idea.
All right, so you said so your research is focusing on range mapping and human bear sort of conflict.
Yeah, we have, like I mentioned, the home range studies, which we're looking at, and we want to look at as well. Mother, we've had three bears actually that were collared when they gave birth. And so we want to take a very close look at movement patterns and behavior pre and post giving birth to the cubs, how their movement changes, that type of thing. I'm looking at some behavioral stuff with leopards and sloth bears and how the two species interact. We also have another denning project going on. We tend to be looking at several different things at once. One big one, Swaminathan is spending a lot of time on, is relocation of sloth bears, because since there are attacks, sometimes bears are moved. Like if a bear is deemed like, okay, this one keeps coming back and attacking people or whatever, you try to move that bear to another location. And of course, as I'm sure, with other bear species, namely brown bears, American black bears, bears tend to come back if you don't move them far enough. And then even if they don't come back, what is the survival of these different bears? So bears have been moved in India for a long time, and the question is, nobody's looked too closely at, was it successful? Did they come back? And have they survived? Did they come back? How far do you have to move them so they don't come back? And so Swami has been spending a lot of time, Swami and Arun, on that question. And so trying to figure that out. So just so that we have some clue in terms of how far do you have to move them? Because, I mean, it's not surprising. I don't think this is giving anything away. But we have had males just go back to where they were before. If it's 100 kilometers away, they'll just go back. And so moving an animal much further than that, you have, of course, you need special permissions to move any bear. But the further away you move, you have to get more permissions and that type of thing.
Yeah, I'm imagining state lines and whatnot. as well as
Exactly.
different. Yeah,
Exactly.
it was interesting. I was going to ask if there were any parallels with like the conflicts you see with sloth bears and other bear species in the world, or any sort of trends, because if the behavior is quite similar or quite different.
In terms of attacks, or
I guess in terms of attacks, but also I guess I suppose in mitigating it as well. Can you apply the same sort of methodology to sloth bears that you can with other bears, or?
to some degree, I think we have had areas where what we try to do in some cases is certainly in parts of their range, and this doesn't apply to all of their range at all, but there are limiting resources like water. Like some of these areas can be quite dry, especially during the summer, dry and hot. And if there is a location where there isn't water, well, needless to say, the bear is going to walk to a different location. So, in other words, we have had cases where we know we have sloth bears in a certain area, and at the driest part of the year, unless you build some water holes there, give them an opportunity for water, they're going to move. And what that means when I say they're going to move is they're going to come across people while they go from one area to the other to get water. And so there are cases where, we try to help create water holes or work with the forest department. Everything we do, we have to work very closely with the government, the local government, the forest departments, to try to mitigate those things. Now, sloth bears also do some crop raiding. They do like things like peanuts. They like to go in and take, they will take corn. I don't think it's been documented to such a high degree. And there's several other things which they definitely do feed on, crops and orchards. We know that, if there's a fruit orchard that borders or even doesn't border too closely a natural area with sloth bears, like some of the bears, they know where that orchard is and you can see it. Like they'll beeline it over to there to get some fruit. Now, this is problem. It's a problem in terms of, well, obviously, if the bears are moving more towards people, there's a possibility of attack, but there's also the bears are at risk from anthropogenic risks, things like falling into open wells, which are a big problem in India. Obviously, getting hit by cars, which is a problem anywhere for bears, as well as getting in snares. Sometimes people will set up snares or use other tactics to, passive tactics to hunt. And usually they're not going after bears, right? They're going after boars or wild pigs. But, they kill bears just as much as they kill these other animals. So yeah, we've actually been looking into, we published a few paper on anthropogenic risks in southern India to sloth bears. And I mean, it's a problem, clearly.
Yeah, but what you say, I mean, it just makes me think of sun bears in like Sumatra. We see a lot of issues with snares there as well. 'Cause same thing, put them out for
Yeah.
boars, and then it's tigers and bears. The you know they don't discriminate, unfortunately.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, it feels like there's so much we know, but yet so much there's still a unravel. One of the sort of differences that struck me, I watched one of Wildlife SOS's videos about living with sloth bears, and one of the main differences to black bears is that you shouldn't fight back. Said you should drop down, cover your face, and it's kind of like the advice for feels like for grizzly bears, and this kind of works. So like if you did come across a sloth bear, the best thing to do is to curl up in the fetal position.
Well, if they charge. So the one nice thing, it's funny to say nice thing. The one consistent thing with sloth bears is, like you're saying, they never attack predatorily. So American black bears and grizzly bears will, it is rare. It is the minority, the small amount of times, but those two species can attack predatorily. So, in other words, with a grizzly, if you get attacked by a grizzly, if it's a defensive attack, you want to curl up in a ball. But if it's a predatorial attack, that's the last thing you would want to do. So, there is an aspect of being able to read an animal's behavior. If a grizzly bear sees you from, say, half mile away, you're in an open area, and that bear sees you and it's slowly walking towards you and continues to walk towards you, and it's kind of making a zigzagging pattern or that type of thing. That's not a good situation because that bear knows you're human and it's still moving towards you. It can be a big problem. In those cases, if that bear eventually does run up on you, it might not be great to curl up. But most attacks are defensive. So you curl up because all the bear is trying to do is this, it's trying to get rid of a threat, and then it'll go off and do its own thing. What's nice with sloth bears is we don't have any predatorial attacks documented. So they are all defensive attacks. And we know this because even their diet, right? This is not a bear that eats red meat. Now, they have been documenting occasionally they will scavenge, or, if they're rooting around for insects, they might eat a few mice or small rodents. We've even had weird cases where they've killed a young deer or something, but that's really an opportunistic thing. They're not really hunting for them. I'm not saying it can't happen, but basically, these bears don't eat red meat. We have no predatorial attacks by a sloth bear. And we know from their biology that, like with tigers, if you see them react with a tiger, once they get that tiger on its heels, they will chase them off, but then they go the other direction. All they want, they don't want to catch that tiger. What are they going to do with the tiger? They are simply trying to scare them off. So, since we know that all sloth bear attacks are defensive, yeah, if I'm walking through the woods and I turn around and hear a huff and that bear comes charging at me, I would turn my back and fall to the ground and cover your face, just like you would a grizzly bear, because like most bears, they go after the face. I've heard different reasons for why they go after the head, but I think it probably has to do with the eyes. I know people have said it's the teeth that can be used as weapons as well, but I think it's a vulnerable space for any mammal, any living thing, or any, not every, any living thing, but things with eyes, that's very vulnerable, and they go towards the head. So you want to cover up and protect your face and everything else. And then if the sloth bear is not surrounded, because I was once shown by a grad student who was studying sloth bears, she actually showed me an attack, which I knew of before, but where the guy was kind of trying to cuddle up and the bear kept going after him. And she couldn't understand why. But of course, what was going on was that bear was completely surrounded by people. It had nowhere to run to. And so it just kept attacking this guy, killed him, and the bear was killed. But if they had just not surrounded the bear, it would have run off. It's displaced aggression almost. I mean, the bear had nowhere to go, nothing to do, and it's clearly in an agitated state. But because sloth bears can be so aggressive, people tend to think they could be predatorial, or they're just trying to get out of the situation. That's all they want.
When you say if it's sloth bears have quite defensive behavior, it feels like it's pretty much on us as humans. If we know this, we should know how to mitigate that and avoid these conflicts.
That's right. And it's kind of the same stuff with other bears where, if you make a bunch of noise, they know you're coming, they're going to leave the area. I will say it appeared, and I did give a talk at a conference once, a bear conflicts conference. And so there were a lot of people there who were basically people who work with brown bears and American black bears all the time. And I did ask their opinion, because I showed them several videos, and I said, I don't think, my impression was that sloth bears aren't quite as aware of their surrounding as American black bears or brown bears. And most everybody agreed with that. They were all like, yeah, that's what it looks like from the videos. Sloth bears just don't seem, they'll deal with an issue being a tiger or a large predator, or unfortunately a human, only when they're very close. Otherwise, they're engaged in what they're doing. And they're kind of a loud bear. I mean, they can be digging in a termite mound, making a lot of noise. So it would be relatively easy for a tiger to sneak up on them, which we have video of. But that doesn't mean the tiger's going to kill them because they react so strongly and so violently that a sloth bear can actually survive that. We have one video where a sloth bear is digging in a little hole, and it opens up, the video opens up, and you can see the tiger just crouched down watching the bear. And eventually the tiger gets up and stalks right up to the bear, literally slaps it on its back haunch. And the bear just spins and huffs really loudly and charges right at the face of the tiger. And that tiger runs for the hills, like wants nothing to do with it, So they can actually survive by behaving that way. So that's fine for tigers, but in the modern world where they're going to come across humans more than tigers, it's not great, is it? Because, the more you maul humans, again, we go back to the conservation efforts, they're a little tougher when people know this as being an aggressive bear, even though the bear, like you're saying, it's really on us, and that's what we try to get across. Like, you're responsible for your own safety. That bear doesn't want to deal with you, but you need to be responsible for your safety. Make noise as you go through the forest. If it does charge, fall to the ground and cover up. And I've even had sloth bear people who'd worked for sloth bears with sloth bears for a long time saying they'd have a hard time falling to the ground because I think the natural instinct is to fight back. But if you fight back, how is a sloth bear, and again, we know this for a fact from video, how is a sloth bear going to react when a tiger does not run but stays there and fights? Well, the sloth bear is going to fight. It's just obvious. It's why you don't fight back with a grizzly bear. Are you going to win a fight with a large grizzly bear? It's not going to happen. So, I mean, it's the same thing with a sloth bear. They're much smaller than grizzlies. They've got really long claws, and you're just, I, it's just not, even if you survive it, chances are your wounds would be so much worse if you fight back. That doesn't mean that the bear might not take one swipe at you or take one bite at your back. It might happen. I mean, I hate to say it, but if it takes one swipe or one bite and runs off, you still survive the encounter.
Is it similar with sloth bears? I mean, because they've got such a specialized diet, do you see the kind of issues where there's food attractants and they enter sort of villages? Does that happen as well?
Well, it does, but not to the extent. So, sloth bears, roughly half their diet is going to be termites and ants. The other half is largely made up of fruit and that type of thing. Honey, there are the odds and ends, things like that, but a lot of fruit. Now, I was recently in India and I had heard these stories about Mount Abu. And in Mount Abu, they say, oh, sloth bears, they're in these dumps, these human dumps. And I thought, that's odd. We really don't see that. I never thought that would be a problem. And I went to Rajasthan with Utkarsh, who's a biologist, a sloth bear biologist, great biologist, and someone he's working with, Nishith Darya, who's also a sloth bear biologist. And they took me and a couple other people up to Mount Abu. And I got to tell you, I was not excited to go because I was just like, I don't like seeing dump bears to begin with. But it really opened my eyes. Like, they took me out at night and to this dump that was up there. And we had like 10 sloth bears just roaming around eating the garbage. And I mean, for people who just work on brown bears and Black American black bears, of course, that's normal. I never thought I would really see that with sloth bears. But in Mount Abu, that's definitely happening. And in fact, the hotel we stayed at, where we had dinner, and I took a photo of it. When we got back the next day, the night we were out looking at them in the dump, they had a bear break into the house. Right where we ate dinner, there's a bear print. Just so it broke into the kitchen there. And I got to tell you, after all my years of working with softwares, I never thought I would see this. And I don't know, and since then, I've heard a few more stories of being there, occurring in other areas. My feeling, and this is more a gut feeling, I shouldn't say, is that overall, we don't have that same trash issue with sloth bears that we do for brown bears, American black bears, even polar bears. But clearly, it is an issue in certain areas, at least. Now, is it getting worse now? So it's going to spread and be everywhere? I don't know. I'd be very careful in speculating because I never thought I would see what I saw there. And, just having that many sloth bears behaving in that fashion where they really seem food conditioned for human food.
Wow, that is fascinating. And all bears seem to just love an easy meal, don't they? It's
Yeah, they do. They really
yeah.
do.
It's like so you were saying you were just in India, so I suppose the way you conduct your research is a mixture of sort of desktop and field based what did you have any sort of other memorable experiences or in the field you could share or surprising, interesting results? I mean, that one you've just said, I'm really intrigued by as well.
Yeah, there's always interesting things. So, like I had told you, like we have a team led by Swaminathan with Wildlife SOS, and so we, obviously, I'm talking to these guys every week when I'm back here, and Swaminathan leads a team out there, and we have so many different things going on. The denning stuff is fascinating, and of course, when I go out, it's always, to be honest, largely like a show and tell. Like there's guys, I used to be in the field all the time, and as inevitably happens, I'm not. But when I get out there, they take me to all the dens so I can visit the areas or where we're setting up a new project. This past time, I was able to visit, like I mentioned, Rajasthan and Gujarat with some colleagues of mine, and we had a couple of. What I thought was funny, I got to tell you this one story. We're in Gujarat, and I believe it was Jessore Sloth Bear Sanctuary. And Nishith and took me out there, and they wanted to show us bears. And so we're staying in the sanctuary, and then we drive out to a little area where the local guy, I think there's a small temple there. And he goes, yeah, in the night, the bears come by here. And so we're like, okay, the first night we were out there, I walked on with Nishith and Pratik, and we saw a bear and I got a photo. But the rest of the group didn't see it. It was coming down this walkway just in the evening. So the next night, we're like, oh, let's go back so that everybody can get a look at this bear. And so there's basically between grad students and professionals, we've got about 10 people who have worked on sloth bears, some just in a zoo, a lot in the field who were used to seeing them. And there's 10 of us there, roughly 10 of us. And we didn't want to scare the bear away. And so all 10 of us were huddled when we thought we heard a bear in this field. And so we're all looking off in one direction, 10 people who are supposed to know sloth bears. And all of a sudden, there's a sound behind us. And Pratik flips around, turns on his light. There's a sloth bear like 5 feet from us. Luckily, the bear just scampered off. But it was unbelievable because, we got 10 people who supposedly know sloth bears. And this bear managed to get right behind us, which is very close for a wild bear. But luckily, that bear wanted nothing to do with, wasn't going to charge a group of 10 people. But that was very, very, I just thought it was ridiculous.
Yes, that is funny. It's almost like it's checking it. Like you're all looking out for the soft bear, and it's looking out for you, going, "Oh, what are these all doing?" It's like,
Yeah, totally.
oh wow,
Totally.
that's so funny. You're also like co-chair, I believe, of the Bear Specialist Group's Sloth Bear Expert Team. Could you tell us a little bit about that? Like what the team's main objectives are?
Yes, of course. So Yeah, it's I'm a co-chair, and Nishith Daria is the other co-chair. And basically, we have a team of sloth bear experts across India, a few in Sri Lanka, a few in Nepal, which is basically all of its range now. And one of our main things is to write up the red list assessment for this species. Our last one was in 2016. It was updated in 2020, which there wasn't too much to do for that quick update, but now we've got to, in fact, this year it looks like we'll start writing the next assessment. So in this assessment, we're basically looking at, what's going on with the population as far as we know. Is it going down? Is it going up? I mean, it's been a downward trend. That's not a surprise. But other than the red list assessment, we also do other projects. Our big project this past year was making a new sloth bear range-wide map. So with every red list assessment, like we had a map with our last one, but there was a big effort this year. Dave Garshelis and I'm forgetting the other fellow's name. Anyway, they got money, got a grad student. Cheng Cheng, she's wonderful. She's at a university in Italy, actually. And the idea is to get a really detailed map on where we have these bears. And it's one way to actually be able to document, are we losing them or are we gaining them? It's hard to quantify what the population is. Everybody wants to say, how many bears are there in India? Well, it's very difficult to say. And if you only look at that, it would be very hard to say what's going on with the population. By understanding the current range of this bear, at least we can know we have bears. In 2026, we had bears in specific areas, and you can at least track that. So if you no longer have bears in an area that we documented occurrence of bears, then very factually you could point to something and say there used to be bears here, there aren't anymore. Or on the other side, if we never had bears in this area, now we've got bears over here, so something is going well. Collecting that data for the last year, it's really been going on longer than a year. Of course, again, this was split up between different members of the Sloth Bear Expert team. So we have different people in different states who can collect data. My team is largely in southern India. And so we were able to collect data for southern India. Nishith and his group in Gujarat and Rajasthan collected for there. And then we have other bear experts from the other states or other countries, including Sri Lanka and Nepal, to get that sort of data. So that's kind of what we've been involved in for and where, probably the big push will be between the red listing and finishing up the mapping work.
Oh, interesting. I mean, because I know sun bears have like a species survival plan, and I think is there an equivalent for sloth bears?
It is on our agenda. We don't have one done right now. I mean, again, luckily, India is pretty good about their laws are very strong in terms of wildlife, which is wonderful. Whether those laws are always completely reinforced or not is another question.
I was going to ask as well, like with Wildlife SOS, do you have any particular involvement with the elephants as well, or is it just the bears you focus on?
Yeah, no, we do. And in fact, again, Swaminathan, our lead out there, is he spent 7 years like tracking wild elephants in the Western Ghats. He's a sloth bear guy now, but he is definitely an elephant guy. And we have a Wildlife SOS project where we are looking at there's a population of elephants in the eastern side. It's one of the smaller populations. So you have your big populations in the northeast. These are wild elephants in the northeast and in southern India, where we do a lot of sloth bear work. And then you have a couple of smaller populations, one in eastern area, which is Chhattisgarh, Orissa, West Bengal. And then there's elephants in the north. Which is also a smaller population. So we're in one of the smaller populated elephant populated areas. But the place we've been working is in central Chhattisgarh, which is actually an interesting story in that elephants had, for the most part, been completely extirpated from central Chhattisgarh. They occurred in northern Chhattisgarh, but in central, they hadn't been there in over 50 years. It's been hard to track exactly how long. It could be 75 years or more, but certainly a generation of people went by without really seeing elephants. Now, occasionally, you might get a migratory elephant moving through, but elephants started showing up and not leaving central Chhattisgarh more recently, in like the last 20 years, less than 20 years, and just not leaving. And it actually, as most people know who work in these parts of the world, elephants can be incredibly dangerous. People who don't, who only have seen them in zoos, you think of tigers as dangerous, elephants as not dangerous. Most people fear elephants more. And so, literally, we were having horrible conflict in this area. And literally, people being killed or injured while taking selfies with elephants. They didn't realize how dangerous these animals can be, especially the males. Something like 80 to 90% of the bad conflicts are with the males, who make up a much smaller part of the population. But so the local government there reached out to Wildlife SOS to see if we would help with some of the issues. And Swaminathan, being an elephant guy, and Dr. Arun as well, took the lead on this and basically went out there. And it's largely outreach to simply teach people. But the other major part that happened was that, the elephants were being tracked in the area by trackers, which is great, but we were able to collar one female with the herd. And so that we could track pretty much in real time where the herd was. And because of this, and everybody there has a cell phone. India's like everywhere else. People have their smartphones. And so literally warnings could go out to the villagers. The elephants are moving towards your village. If your kids are out playing, get them in or what have you. And for the crops, because this is one of the other just major problems here, is of course the elephants raid crops. And an elephant herd can do an awful lot of damage to a crop field, not just by eating them, but by just, a stamp, a group of elephants, 20 elephants or more. That can do a lot of damage. So there are certain areas you certainly don't want the elephants to go, but if you know the elephants are coming, then you can use certain mitigation methods, not ones that are going to injure the elephants. Just keep them out. Safe mitigation methods for both the elephants and the people. Obviously, what we want here is a level of coexistence, which can occur, but it's an ongoing project. I mean, it's not easy, but the people there really are incredible, largely. And as long as you understand their concerns, it's like, I go out and if I see a male elephant, all I think about is, my God, that is a beautiful animal, and it's true. But of course, if you live there and you see a large male elephant walking down your street, they'll stick their head right through the wall of a house. I mean, it's just you have to understand what the people are going through to try to get to some level of coexistence. And if you can help the people, you can help the animals.
Yeah, of
And
course. That's interesting. And I like how it's a positive use of modern technology where you're able to kind of send alerts out to people that elephants are coming.
I mean that really worked quite well. Now the collar's off the elephant now, but we still have trackers doing the natural tracking. You
This
know,
might
they're
seem
quite good at it, but
that's good. Is it might seem like a silly question. Is that like a neck collar or something that goes, yeah?
yes, it is.
All right, yeah. Just wondering.
And it lasted about 2 years before, and elephants can be quite hard on their collars, but this one lasted a good 2 years. And so not only were we able to use that data to obviously send out the warning messages, but now we have 2 year data of this herd working in this area, which we are just finishing our first paper now, just looking at the scientific data. So it really served two functions. One is in the moment to have real time. And then secondly, okay, what can we learn from what these elephants, how they've been moving the last 2 years? How can that be used to mitigate problems as well?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they go the same route, in future as
Yeah,
well.
exactly.
I also just go back to bears as well. In 2022, Wildlife SOS sort of launched the first World Sloth Bear Day, which I believe is on October 12th. And I kind of wanted to hear what your thoughts were on why we need a Sloth Bear Day. Why is it important?
Yeah, it's funny. That had come up like, oh, we should do a World Sloth Bear Day. And the question was, of course, how do we do this? And basically, our executive director, Nikki, just was like, let's just move forward with it. Like, what's the point in waiting for permission from anybody anywhere? It's just a day to think about this animal and to bring it more into the limelight. And it's been very useful, actually. Like these types of, you could say it's just a marketing thing. Marketing and information is important. And it's once a year where we can highlight this. And we, every year on this day, it's not just Wildlife SOS, it's other groups across India. They go out to this, they actually like, people go out to the schools more than just once a year to actually educate about sloth bears, but it's a day where you can bring more attention and get more notoriety for just doing that, for getting out and, talking about this animal, its importance to the heritage of India, but how to stay safe in sloth bear country. It just highlights the animal. And, for an animal like the sloth bear that which tends not to get a ton of press, again, it's not a tiger, it's not an elephant, but it's a fascinating animal. And just to highlight that, I think is useful.
And are you quite optimistic about the future of sloth bears?
Yeah, I mean, with wildlife, it's always one concern after another, but I think that I'm optimistic. I think that there's been a lot of very positive changes in the last 20 years. Wildlife SOS ending the dancing bear trade, although that almost popped up again. But everyone's keeping an eye on that to make sure it doesn't come back. There's other groups, other good nonprofit groups doing a lot of good work. Recently, Dave had an article on the least studied bears in the world. And basically, it was three species: sloth bear, sun bear, and the Andean bear. And I always thought that was funny because I don't place sloth bears with Andean bear or sun bears because of the fact that if you want to study sloth bears, we know where to find them. Sun bears, and you probably know this from your time, they're tough to find, like if to study. And I've talked with a lot of sun bear biologists, and they don't have nearly the amount of data. I know an Andean bear specialist, ecologist, Russ Van Horn, and we compare denning data we get, and he has a hard time getting data for Andean bear denning. I'm like, well, we know where the sloth bears are denning, at least in my area. I will caveat this and say I have talked to sloth bear biologists in Sri Lanka, and this is one of those unknown things, is that whereas I'm trying, what I've been saying up to this point is we could know a lot about sloth bears, and now I actually think we are getting to know more, which means you can manage better for them. And I think we've come up with a lot of great data recently, just more data about home ranges and building up what was known, because a lot of the sloth bear studies were all about attacks. And there's only so much you can learn from an animal just by studying its attacks. We need to know the ecology, but it's there to be studied. But when I bring up Sri Lanka, I find this fascinating to this day, which is it has been suggested that sloth bears on the Indian mainland, they breed at a specific time during the year, which is basically the beginning of summer. They give birth in the winter. It's been suggested that in Sri Lanka they don't do this, that they will actually breed year round. And nobody seems to know. And I thought this was fascinating because it's like I talked to a guy down there who studies sun bears. We actually visited him a couple years ago in Sri Lanka. And he was saying, you don't understand. We don't see mothers with cubs. So, like, where our wildlife SOS study is, we can put up camera traps. We know where the sloth bears are going. We see mothers with cubs. We get them in the camera traps all the time. Out there, because I just thought, well, this is simple. Just, send me all the photos you have of sloth bears with cubs on Sri Lanka in a dated photo. And we can estimate the age and start to get an idea if they all, if they seem to be breeding year round or not. And Chandima was telling me, no, we don't see them with cubs, hardly ever. And he's in the midst of collecting all the data they do have of sloth bears with cubs, just in an effort to start to get an idea of if they really are breeding year round. Now, the idea comes from the only bear which does not seem to be breeding at a specific time of the year is your species, the sun bear. They seem to breed year round. They're the most tropical of all the bears. So there is an argument to say, well, the Sri Lankan sloth bear is the most tropical of all the sloth. They're found further south than any other bear. They've been isolated on Sri Lanka for how long, we don't know, but at least 10,000 years. Or thereabouts, let's say. But it could be that that subspecies has really been developing, different, I don't know what you would say, but they probably crossed over the land bridge in the Pleistocene. So they, we could have something different going on in Sri Lanka. It is possible. They're the most tropical ones. Do they breed year round? Now, most software people I talk to don't believe it. They think they're still probably breeding at a specific time during the year. And I got to be honest, if I had to guess, that's the way I lean as well. But that doesn't mean that is the case, and we don't know yet. So there are like very simple issues like that we still don't know about this bear. And certainly the Sri Lankan subspecies is much less known than, the one on the mainland, which is still one of the least studied bears in the world. It's still one of the three least studied bears in the world. So.
Oh wow, it's so interesting. I'm like, wow. The thing about sloth bears are just they're real. Well, I find them really interesting, but partly it's because of the fact that they seem kind of slightly unknowable in a way. They've got like
Yeah.
an aloofness to them.
They definitely do.
Yeah. Oh, it's really interesting. I had just a couple more questions. I'm just checking you don't have to get away or anything.
No, I'm good. I'm
You go. Oh,
good.
great. Thank you. I suppose I kind of it was just a general one about if you had any sort of advice for anyone listening that might want to be getting into wildlife work, if it's research or conservation or if they're budding researchers.
Of course, I don't know if I actually do, but
That's fair. I mean,
yeah,
you
I
don't have
find
to.
it. No, I mean, I find it incredibly rewarding career. Obviously, job market is not huge. That's
No,
the
you've
one
got
thing
to. No, don't
I
worry. I know that.
always worry about. But the old saying about if you do something you love, you don't really work. And certainly, like it is funny because I do kind of feel that way. Like if you're passionate about wildlife, first of all, to get involved in conservation, there's so many ways to get involved. And there's more citizen science out there and everything else. And you can work with nonprofits, you can volunteer for nonprofits, can start up your own nonprofit even. But there's tons of ways to get involved in conservation and even research. Professionally, I think it is a rewarding career. I think it's and I wouldn't be dissuaded by the fact that it's not a huge job market or anything like that.
I also, this might be a bit facetious, but I wondered if you had any feelings either way on Baloo from the Jungle Book.
Yeah, that's a great question because it's kind of funny. I know people who are very negative on Blue, the way that character is kind of played out in one guy was saying Baloo was kind of a sellout to the jungle, that type of thing. I'm not a big Jungle Book guy. I do like the fact that a sloth bear is in there at all, but isn't it funny how in that cartoon, I mean, Baloo is a brown bear and looks nothing like a sloth bear. And maybe that's understandable for the old version of the Jungle Book, but even in the newer versions, they don't really go to an animal that looks at all like a
Well, no,
sloth
because
bear,
I
which
think
is very
they
personal.
specifically refer to him as a sloth bear as well, don't they? And he looks nothing like one, so I don't
I mean,
know.
he's got to be because, I mean, it's in Kanto National Park, which I've been to and spent time at. And I mean, there's only one bear there. It is a sloth bear. There's no
Yeah.
question. And for it to look like a brown bear, I don't know. I guess I don't understand it. I just think that probably back then when Disney was first putting this out, they just felt like a bear is a bear that looks like a bear in America. And they just couldn't even fathom, how, like maybe they didn't think it would play well with their audience. I don't know. I think it's so weird.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, it's a lot more global, the world now, than it was back then, I guess. Oh, that's great. And when are you next planning to get to India? You got something already
I
planned or?
don't know. I usually will go in the fall. And I
Like
don't
that.
think I have plans to go before then, but it's always usually the fall because, yeah, what I do is I kind of double up on some of my trips because we do bring like so we have, as you know, soft bear sanctuaries. These are bears which can't be returned to the wild. And so they're in captivity. They're in captivity because they were either danced as dancing bears and they have a lot of health issues, or they were brought in because of human bear conflicts and they can't be released. So that's the first thing for people to know. The only reason we have bears in captivity is because they can't be in the wild. And because we have them, we also have a program. It's an exchange program with bear keepers in the United States at in zoos. People, a lot of people who actually, some people who take care of sloth bears in the United States, but other people who just take care of bears, not necessarily sloth bears. And they come out to India, and it's an exchange with our keepers. I'm not a keeper, and but I tend to go out to help facilitate some of that stuff going on, and then I go into the field with my team as well. So I tend to do both at the same time when I can, put those types of trips together. But I bring up that trip because it has been very useful because, the American zookeepers learn a lot about specifically sloth bears because we've had more sloth bears. We have more now than probably most of these people have ever seen in their lives, you know. And so we have all this background information. We have vets who specialize in sloth bears, which can talk to their vets. So that, you know, it's very useful for the Americans. And then the Americans are also able to help teach certain techniques to our staff that they don't know. So it's very much an exchange of knowledge type of thing, which I think has been useful for everybody. And it's also helped me get to know a lot of the keepers, which I'm not a zoo person per se, but I've learned a lot. Like I was telling you earlier during this call, I've learned a lot from people who are or have, even when I have questions about, you know, young cubs in captivity, because there's certain stuff in the wild we just, it's hard to tell. You know, you can watch sloth bear cubs in the wild, but I can't tell how good of climbers they are if they're just on their mom's back. But we can ask somebody who's raising them in a zoo, it's very different. Are they physically able to do this? And they can tell me, oh, yes or no, or, you know, this is what we see. So it's been interesting. But yeah, there's always stuff going on.
I managed to get to visit the Agra facility, and I was very impressed by the level of care and the lovely big enclosures. And there were a couple of individual bears. There was one called Elvis. I
Oh, yeah, Elvis.
he actually, because I was with Shivam, who I think he said he had helped hand raise him when he came in as a really young cub, and we were just looking at him, and he was like, "Oh, he's really friendly." And then of course, he bluff charged right at the fence at me, but I didn't mind that because it meant that because he went, you know, on his back legs and went up, and it gave me a really good view of his chest and everything. But I was like, "Oh, sorry, I'll leave you be then. I don't want to bother you."
That's great what you just described, because that's that they do this with tigers where they first will stand and then they'll charge. And I think it might be to show how big they are, an intimidating factor, as well as obviously it gives them a better view. You know, they stand up just like brown bears do. But I think, like you see in the wild with tigers, like when the bear stands up right away, the tiger kind of is like, whoa, you know, what's this type of reaction to a bear just standing? But I'm kind of glad you got to see one of their charges. Did it huff at you? Did Elvis huff at you, or did it make
Oh
him?
yeah, he did it. He gave me a full
He's
show.
intimidating. Isn't it intimidating? I think sloth bears are like the badger of the bear world.
Well, the honey
That's
badger.
how I think of them. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's funny because I mean, sun bears are known as the honey bear, you know, colloquially. So, but I guess sloth bears, they like honey, but they're more honey badger than sun bears, I'd say.
Yeah, and you know, Melursus, I've seen sloth bears under the genus Molursus or Ursus, but usually it's Molursus. And in Latin, that is honey bear. I think
Oh, there
every
you go.
bear likes honey. So it's like, you know, I mean, kind of across the board. I don't know what polar bears do, but every other species, as far as I know. I mean, of course, a wild polar bear would never come across honey, but
Well,
you
no,
know.
I mean, you wouldn't expect it. I was going to say as well, I'll put some links in the show notes, specifically that bear specialist group, that website there. I think it's global conservation .org or whatever. It's a great resource. It's like I feel like it's a one-stop shop. I go if I need to like just think. I'm like, oh, what's that again? Like quick fact about something. I'll just look on there.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that's
but
Dave. I mean, Dave did an incredible job with that.
oh yeah. Well, tell him thank you from me. Yeah, but if there was for anyone interested to find out more about the work you're doing or even offer support, is there anywhere you'd direct people to?
Yeah, probably to wildlifesos.org. It's our website. There's a lot of information on there.
That there is. It's great. Was there anything else you'd care to mention, by the way? Anything we haven't covered that you think needs to be heard?
I think I've talked probably too much,
No,
actually.
never, never. I always think in the back of my mind, I'm like, is anyone but me interested? But I think there are. I think there is.
Yeah.
And like I say, I kind of want with this, I like to highlight people and like yourself and organizations, and I mean you're doing amazing work, and it's very inspiring, I find.
Well, I appreciate it. I really do.
Oh, lovely. Well, I mean, yeah, I won't keep you. if you need to get away. But I really appreciate the time you've taken. You've given me more time and so much more information than I expected, but I've really enjoyed it.
Good.
And
Good. I'm glad.
yeah, I'm sure people will enjoy listening and hearing what's going on, because especially I know majority of our listeners have come in from the sort of black bear world, but I think this is should be equally as fascinating, because it might be something they're unfamiliar with. So.
Yeah, it is funny with sloth bears. I'm ashamed to admit it almost, but the first time I met Kartik, I didn't really know what a sloth bear was. And I was in my 30s when I met him. So this is going back 20 years, but it is funny. I don't think a lot of, certainly not of Amer a lot of Americans have no idea what a sloth bear is or anything else. I know that's true in this country, but they're kind of a weird one.
Yeah, don't
I mean
worry.
that in a very good way.
And thanks once again to Thomas. I'm especially thankful for his time and openness to speak to me. And like I say, I hope you enjoyed the journey with me. In conclusion, sloth bears are pretty cool, and there's always something new to learn. I want to end with a parting thought on what Thomas said, which is a good reminder for us all on living with and coexisting with wildlife. If you help the people, you can help the animals. Thanks for listening, and until next time, bye for now. The Bear Den, the American Bear Association podcast, was written and presented by me, Philip Stubley. The music was composed by React Music. Thank you to everyone who has helped make this podcast possible, including Karen Hauserman, Bill Lee, Clary Lee, Stephanie Horner, Donna Brazinka, Ross Coyer, and Angie Page. You can find out more about the American Bear Association at americanbear.org. You can find Vinshuti Wildlife Sanctuary on Facebook and Instagram. You can ask questions and submit comments about the podcast to pstubley@americanbear.org. The ABA is a special circumstance. We do not condone feeding wild animals. If you enjoy this podcast, help support the ABA, either by donating, becoming an ABA member, symbolically adopting a bear, or come visit the sanctuary during the season and say hello. And if you do enjoy this, please do us a favour. It'll barely take you a minute. On whatever platform you're listening to this on, please either follow us or click the bell for updates and notifications. Please share with family and friends and rate the podcast, as it all helps us grow and is greatly appreciated.